Unless there are further amendments, I see Representative Vasquez off the floor. Excuse me. Unless there's further amendments, I'm going to ask the Majority Leader for an advancement motion. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 838 be considered engrossed, advance the third reading, placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 838, Finance, entitled, An Act Relating to the Tax on Alcoholic Beverages and Providing for an Effective Date.
Is there debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 838 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk, may take the roll.
The roll shows 16 yeas, 22 nays.
The Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 838 has failed to pass the House. Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I give notice reconsideration of my vote of committee substitute House Bill 838, Finance.
Notice of reconsideration has been given by Representative Meekins. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 101 by Sharoff, Grusendorf, and Bettisworth. The Resources Committee had House Bill 101 under consideration. The committee recommended due pass, the majority of the committee. The due pass was signed by Sharoff, co-chairman, Hurlburt, Chuckluck, Vasquez, Sutcliffe, and Grusendorf. Smith signed do not pass unless repeal on motor fuel taxes. Barnes signed do not pass unless repeal. Halford signed do not pass. Bettys were assigned no recommendation. Finance Committee had House Bill 101 under consideration. The committee recommended replace with committee substitute for House Bill 101 by Finance. Reported back as follows. Adams, chairman, had no recommendation. Montgomery, Haugen, Cotton had no recommendation. And Teddy, no recommendation. Chuckluck and Fuller signed do not pass. Bettisworth signed do pass. The Rules Committee had House Bill 101 under consideration, recommended replace with committee substitute for House Bill 101 by Rules, recommended do pass. Representative Fuller and O'Connell and Hayes signed do pass. Smith and Phillips had no recommendation. Speaker referred it back to Finance a second time. Finance considered the bill a second time and recommended replace with committee substitute for House Bill 101, the second Finance Committee substitute, entitled An Act Relating to the Motor Fuel Tax, AS 4340, and Providing for an Effective Date. They attached a letter of intent and a fiscal note. Adams, chairman, signed no recommendation. Chuckluck and Cotton had no recommendation. Members signing do pass, Bettisworth, Hurlburt, Carney, Cuddy, Fuller, and Montgomery.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the second Finance Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection. Well, before we stand at ease, I'm going to place a call on the second Finance Committee substitute, and will the House please stand at ease? Please come back to order. The House, please come back to order. Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we return introduction to guests, please?
Without objection, we'll return introduction to guests. Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Gallery B is a constituent of Representative Miller's and mine, and I noticed she's been looking at my chair ever since she came into gallery, so I thought I would introduce her. Candidate for the legislature, Suzanne Jansen.
The House is under call. We have before us the question of the adoption of the second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101 in lieu of the original bill, Representative Brown. Call is not satisfied. I'll lift the call, however. Is there objection to the adoption of the second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101 in lieu of the original bill? Hearing none, Representative Clarkson. House, please stand at ease. Is the objection maintained to the adoption of the second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101 in lieu of the original bill? Hearing none, the second Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Will the clerk please read the First Amendment?
Amendment number one is by Representative Jaroff to page 1, lines 8 and 9. Add new section 1. The original contents of House Bill 101, repealing the tax on motor fuel used in or on watercraft. Renumber sections accordingly.
Representative Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The hour is getting late. This is Russian Easter. I should be home with my family. I should have had this amendment written out, but I think rather than it would have been a three-page amendment, and the contents of the amendment would be the original House Bill 101, which is in your packet. It is there for everybody to view, which just simply repeals the tax on motor fuel. This was, if you'll remember last week, the objection I had there with the new, excuse me, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the amendment be adopted.
Thank you. There is objection. Thank you. Representative Zaroff.
I can't understand why there's objection. We've discussed this here last week. I've presented my case to the Finance Committee day before yesterday, and my pleas fell upon deaf ears, so I'm again presenting the case here before the body in hopes there that people would see that this is possibly a needed amendment that could help the fishing industry, particularly the fishermen, and pleasure boat users throughout the state. So I would move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I object to the amendment. We had this bill before us in Resources a year ago. At that time, I opposed the bill, and the reason why is very simple. If you repeal the tax on one part of the using public, I mean aviation gas, the motor fuel tax, then you should also repeal the tax on all portions of the using public, and then mean aviation fuel, automobile fuel. I think it's very discriminatory to repeal it on one section of the industry and not on the rest.
Is there further debate? Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, speaking of the amendment, I've been working with this subject quite extensively, and I'm not particularly objectional to the amendment or the idea of the amendment, but as Representative Cotton, or excuse me, the representative from Eagle River, mentioned in earlier debate, letting the cat out of the bag, the situation is that there's a very high probability that this legislation, which is very important legislation, will not pass the legislature this year if this amendment is adopted, and therefore I'm objecting to the amendment.
Representative Gardner.
Speaker, although I'd like to help my friend from Kodiak and certainly help the fishing industry, I don't think at a time when we're looking at a $1 billion deficit between what we are going to be spending this year and what our actual revenues are this year that we can really be pushing ahead to repeal any kind of tax revenues, because it's just going to mean it's going to pop up someplace else. We're going to have to tax somebody else to replace these lost revenues. And though I might like to vote for it at another time, I just don't think that it would be too consistent on my part to be favoring the repeal of this when we are in this deficit situation. And what we ought to be looking around for, besides ways to cut government spending, are ways to increase our revenues so that we have a balanced budget this year.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 1 to the Second Finance Committee Substitute for House Bill 101? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 12 yeas, 26 nays.
The House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 1. Will the clerk please read Amendment Number 2?
Amendment Number 2 by Representative Halford to page 2, line 15. Delete the word amounts, insert amount. Line 16, delete 1, paragraph 1. Line 18 through 20, delete all up subsection 2.
Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill carries a two-part surtax on aviation fuel, aviation gasoline, and in fuel other than gasoline, primarily jet fuel. If you look at the text of the original of House Bill 101, you can see that the rate for aviation gasoline is almost twice that of what it is for jet fuel. This surtax is to fund aviation safety and training programs, which I certainly agree with. Those programs are primarily of a benefit to the commercial operators because they reduce or hope to reduce insurance rates. And I support those programs, but I don't believe that the aviation gasoline consumer, who is not really going to get much of that benefit, should pay the bill. The larger operators using turbine aircraft and the air taxi operators will get the benefit of any insurance reductions. However, a great deal of people using aviation gasoline own their own airplanes. They don't carry hull insurance on them, and they only carry liability insurance if they're operating commercially. They receive no benefit, and they pay the additional cost. The market is about 95% jet fuel, not aviation gasoline, so I believe there's enough revenue to fund those programs in the turbine fuel only.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I think I support the amendment, but the way the clerk read it, it sounded like we were deleting both sub 1 and sub 2, and I wonder if the clerk could please reread the amendment.
Will the clerk please reread Amendment Number 2?
Page 2, line 15. Delete the word amounts. Insert amount without an S. On line 16, delete the one that's in the parentheses. Lines 18 through 20, delete all of subsection 2.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, so then there would be a half cent a gallon tax on all aviation gasoline and no tax on aviation fuel other than gasoline. May we have a brief at ease?
Well, the House, please stand at ease. This time I'm going to place a call on the Second Finance Committee Substitute for House Bill 101. Representative Halford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The prior speaker was correct. The numbers were reversed in 1 and 2. I'd like to, at this time, move and ask unanimous consent. I'd be allowed to withdraw Amendment Number 1. I mean, Number 2.
Will you, amendment, would you... This time I'll lift the call. Would you replace the motion?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent. I'd be allowed to withdraw Amendment Number 1.
Amendment Number 2.
Number 2.
Without objection, Amendment Number 2 is withdrawn. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I believe there is another amendment on the clerk's desk.
Be Amendment Number 3. Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment Number 3 by Representative Halford and Rogers. Page 2, lines 16 through 17. Delete lines 16 through 17. Page 2, line 15, delete the word amounts, insert amount. Page 2, line 18, delete the 2 in parentheses.
Representative Halford, wish to move the amendment?
Mr. Speaker, I believe that delete 2 is delete subsection 2. Yeah, it's all of...
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There is objection. Will the clerk please reread the amendment for clarity? At this time, I'm going to replace the call on the second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101. Clerk, please reread amendment number 3.
Amendment number 3, to page 2, lines 16 through 17, delete lines 16 through 17. Page 2, line 15, delete the word amounts with the S, insert amount, no S. Page 2, line 18, delete the 2 in parentheses.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, that then, it would then read in context, there's levied a surtax on aviation fuel in addition to the tax imposed in AS 4340010 in the following amount: 1/4 cent a gallon on all aviation fuel other than gasoline sold or otherwise transferred in the state or consumed by a user. Mr. Speaker, again, repeating the arguments that were first used by the majority leader, the aviation gas is not, produces very little of the revenue that this surtax would provide. The currently, AvGas has a tax of 4 cents a gallon. This would make it four. If the amendment's not adopted, it would go to 4.5. But for jet fuel, it's 2.5 cents, and then here would be going to 2.75 cents. I don't see a reason that jet fuel should be that far below AvGas in the first place, and I further see no reason why the AvGas should have a higher tax. And so I think that this surtax would still raise the amount of money, roughly about 90% of the amount of money that was originally seen by the bill, and I think the member should vote yes.
Representative Hurlburt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have to oppose this amendment. I've had a lot of the Air Carriers Association come into my office proposing this whole section, and they had was in total agreement. I've had letters supporting this, and they want smaller operators want to share in the cost. I have had no opposing arguments for it, and I oppose the amendment.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, we've had some arguments made here that by rewriting this bill that we can accomplish the original intent of the bill because there's not very much aviation gasoline sold relative to the amount of jet fuel. But I'd like to hear some numbers so I can see how much it's going to take to fund this program. What's the change in revenues going to be if we adopt this amendment, so I can see if that argument has any factual basis.
Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, the funding sought for the aviation safety program has ranged all the way from, I believe, $5 million to down somewhere around $500,000. And the funding, of course, depends on how much is available. The funding has to be appropriated by the legislature.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, what's the amendment going to cost? If we take out this section on 1/2 cent a gallon on aviation gasoline, how much are we going to reduce the revenues that are proposed by this bill?
Representative Hurlburt.
Mr. Speaker, I don't have that answer, but this amendment wouldn't reduce it a whole lot. I mean, it's just the, I think there's a lot more of the turbine fuel sold than regular aviation gasoline, but it's the fact that I think all of them ought to share in the cost.
Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, it's not the commercial operators that we're worried about. In my own situation, because I am an air taxi operator and I'm required to have insurance, there's a benefit that may be passed on by safety programs and insurance rates. But the majority of the smaller operators, the aircraft around Anchorage, Birchwood, anywhere in the state, probably won't receive any benefit. And those are the ones that are going to pay most of the increase as far as the gasoline side.
Representative Gardner.
Speaker, could we have an at ease? So I'm going to try and look up the answer.
The House, please stand at ease. During the at ease, we have an amendment to amendment number 3 on the clerk's desk. Will the clerk please read the amendment to amendment number 3, which is the amendment before us?
The amendment to amendment number 3 is by Representative Gardner, page 2, line 24, add new section. Section 6, AS 4340010A is amended to read, subsection 3, the tax on all aviation fuel other than gasoline is 4 cents.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I would move the amendment to the amendment number 3.
Is there objection?
Objection.
There is objection. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, in getting the information on what this amendment would do, it becomes clear that the existing state of our law is that aviation gasoline is taxed at a rate of 4 cents and that jet fuel is taxed at a rate of 2.5 cents. And certainly there's a lot of jet fuel purchased and a lot of revenues. A greater proportion of revenues come from that. But I think there's a question of equity here. And part of the whole point of this bill is to deal with the safety problems, which are causing tremendously high insurance rates, which are causing tremendous financial burdens for our small air carriers, which are a very essential transportation service in this state. And I know a lot of money is really going into airports that are raised from these fuel monies, but a lot of that's directed towards our jet airlines, especially here in Southeast. Most of our smaller planes are float planes, and they may or may not receive any benefit from directly to their businesses. But I think that this issue that has been brought up is a good opportunity to address the inequity that we have in the present law. And by raising the tax up to the 4 cents that all of our small Alaskan carriers are paying for aviation gasoline, I don't think we'll have any problem with having enough money that's raised from the taxes to increase the money that's needed for the traffic safety. In FY81, our total revenues raised were $4.1 million, $3.4 million from jet fuel, aviation gas, $656,000. So bringing that up to 4 cents instead of 2.5 cents is going to add another over $1 million. And certainly that would more than fund this program without having to consider raising the tax, as the amendment number 3 brings out, on the aviation gas, which is already the highest tax anyway.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, could the clerk please reread the amendment?
Would the clerk please reread the amendment to amendment number 3?
The amendment is to page 2, line 24, add new section, section 6, AS 4340010A is amended to read, subsection 3, the tax on all aviation fuel other than gasoline is 4 cents.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, there's a defect in the amendment. May we have a brief at ease?
The House, please stand at ease. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, in an effort to allow the body a clearer amendment to vote on, I would like to withdraw the amendment to the amendment.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the amendment to amendment number 3 is withdrawn.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent. I'd be allowed to withdraw amendment number 3.
Representative Halford has moved and asked unanimous consent that amendment number 3 be withdrawn. Is there objection? Hearing none, amendment number 3 is withdrawn. Representative Gardner.
Speaker, I would like to offer the same amendment to amendment as amendment number 4. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that amendment number 4 be adopted.
Will the clerk please read amendment number 4?
Amendment number 4 by Representative Gardner. Page 2, line 24, add new section. Section 6, AS 4340010A, 3 is amended to read, 3, the tax on all aviation fuel other than gasoline is 4. Delete 2.5 cents a gallon.
Representative Gardner, would you move amendment number 4 again, just to be safe?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of amendment number 4.
There is objection. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, in context, the existing section of 4340.010A3 would now read, the tax on all aviation fuel other than gasoline is 4 cents a gallon. During the ADEs, it was pointed out to me by offering it as an amendment to the amendment, the end result would have been that not only would jet fuel been brought up to 4 cents where aviation gasoline is now, but then the quarter cent surcharge would have been on the jet fuel also. I think if the body's willing to, with the adoption of this amendment, by merely increasing the jet fuel tax to the 4 cents that aviation fuel is now paying, there will not be any necessity for a surtax on aviation gasoline because there will be more than enough revenues to fund the safety program.
Representative Hurlburt.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this act's supposed to be repealed in 1985, and I don't think there was any reason to do this. I oppose all these amendments on this section because they had it all figured out. They'd generate enough revenue to finance this safety program, and I just don't think we ought to be messing with this section.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know if it's appropriate now to raise this question, but since there's continual reference to the use of this fund, the funds that are going to be raised, I think it is appropriate that the body be aware that there's a considerable constitutional problem with this. I also don't think it's appropriate to raise it as a point of order, but Mr. Speaker, Article 9, Section 7 of the Alaska Constitution provides, in part, the proceeds of any state tax or license shall not be dedicated to any special purpose. Then continuing with some exceptions that are not relevant. An Attorney General's opinion in 59 described a dedication as something that includes the following 3 criteria. First, it's the proceeds or part of the proceeds of a tax or a license. Second, those proceeds must be set aside at a certain rate. And 3, they be set aside for a certain purpose. Mr. Speaker, I understand that page 2, lines 21 through 24 provide that the surtax is going to be deposited in the general fund, and I suppose that's the argument why it is not a dedication of funds. It's been made real clear from the discussion on the floor, however, that the expectation is that the amount you fund the aviation safety program is based on the amount of the tax. Mr. Speaker, I don't think that's constitutional, and so to the extent that the discussion here measures how much you're increasing or decreasing the tax or the surtax in order to fund a specific program, I think that's entirely inappropriate.
Representative Hurlburt.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that's the best we can do. I'd like to bring a notice to line 22. It says the legislature may annually appropriate an amount equal to the proceeds. In other words, it's very permissive, but it's kind of a letter of intent, and he's right, the debate is going that direction. But they come down looking for some money and wanted to tax herself, and there's no other method to do this. And so it's generally accepted throughout the legislature that's what was going to happen with the money. But I oppose this amendment.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, it's clearly not a dedication of funds. All the way through the statutes we have, for example, on revenue sharing, the same thing, where it's a quasi-designation, I suppose, but because it says the legislature may appropriate, it's clearly constitutional. It's been established in dozens of bills in the past few years. But speaking to the amendment that's before us, I do support the amendment. I think that the amendment would make it would spread the burden evenly between the private pilot and the jet fuel purchaser. It would raise a fair amount of revenue for on the order of $1.5 million a year from jet fuel, and we wouldn't be discriminating against the private pilots.
Representative Bettesworth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I think this is a good program to try to raise some funds for the safety program of the aircraft industry, but I would like to point out that we just went through considerable debate a while ago debating on doubling the tax on liquor. This is in raising the tax on jet fuel in excess of 50% of what it is right now. And I would submit that Alaska, in fact, your community in particular, is quite proud of the number of overseas aircraft that come in here and refuel and bring considerable financial activity to the communities, particularly of Anchorage. And I think this is an excessive increase in the tax on jet fuel. Perhaps a half a cent per gallon would raise the necessary funds. If I remember the figures correctly in the Finance Committee, somebody was looking for $300,000 or $400,000 for this program. Now, we've already been told that this tax will raise $1.5 million. If it is, in fact, a tax to raise the revenue for a program that we have a dollar figure on, then why not set the increase accordingly? Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 4 to the Second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative O'Connell? Representative O'Connell, yes to no. Representative Duncan? Representative Duncan, yes to no. Clerk, may take the roll.
The roll shows 7 yeas, 31 nays.
Amendment number 4 has not been adopted. Does the clerk have further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hofford?
Mr. Speaker, I would like to again move the amendment that was offered as amendment number 3.
As amendment number 5?
Yes.
The clerk, please read amendment number 5.
I can figure out what it is.
Approve it, please.
Amendment number 3 is the same, will be amendment number 5. Clerk, please read amendment number 5.
Amendment number 5 by Halford and Rogers. Page 2, lines 16 through 17, delete lines 16 through 17. Page 2, line 15, delete amounts, insert amount with no S. Page 2, line 18, delete the 2 in parentheses.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? There is objection. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, we went back through the numbers to see what the effect of this was. I think we've gone through the difference now in the fuel tax for aviation, gasoline, and jet fuel, although the approach to equalization I would have taken might have been different. It would have been to reduce the tax on aviation gasoline. What this does is the bill before us provides twice the increase in aviation gasoline as it does in jet fuel, and yet that only generates $84,000 based on what last year's tax revenues were. The Air Safety Foundation is trying to raise as close as they can to $500,000. That, as I said, has come down from something around $5 million. The revenue generated by the jet fuel portion only is $420,000. I believe that's adequate, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hurlburt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to reiterate again that everybody wants to participate in this program, and I'll tell you, I'd just like to point out, we're talking about private pilots. Most private pilots fly airplanes that are going anywhere from 5 gallons an hour to about 15. On a normal flying hour, we're talking about about a nickel an hour to support this program. And I oppose this amendment. I think we ought to just leave it like it is. They've had it all thought out.
Representative Sutcliffe.
One question, Mr. Speaker. If this is a good program, their air safety program, and it's going to reduce insurance rates and it's going to perhaps make the air is a little bit safer to fly in, why do this group of people, which actually represent the whole industry, have to come down here and say we want to tax ourselves to in order to do this program? If it's a good program, why can't the state just fund the program?
Is there further debate? Representative, are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 5 to the second committee the second finance committee substitute for House Bill 101. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 14 yeas, 24 nays.
The House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 5. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment Number 6 by Representative Gardner, page 2, line 22, add a new section, section 6, AS 4340010A. 1 is amended to read, 1, the tax on aviation gasoline is delete 4, insert 2 and 1/2 cents a gallon, and...
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of Amendment Number 6.
There is objection. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, this amendment offers another alternative to those who are worried about the jets not coming into Anchorage and Fairbanks. I think the issue here is one of equity of tax rates. And it seems to me that we've got a lot of small businessmen and other people flying airplanes in this state, and although we're only talking about reducing their tax from 4 cents to 2.5, it just doesn't make any sense to me why very large companies and corporations can get the break on the taxes and the individual can't. Now, I guess I can understand people not wanting to raise the tax on the people flying the jets around because they're afraid they'll leave town. But I think this is another alternative that supplies the equity in another format. Now, it's going to cost a reduction in state revenues, which I'm not really in favor of, but I am more in favor of establishing some equity in our tax policy between two people who are flying airplanes. One just happens to have a jet and a big company, and the other guy's got a 185 and a little company. And as far as I know, most of the air taxis in this state are having a very difficult financial times. I've heard this from a lot of them. They've got a lot of problems. And why we want to maintain a higher level of taxes and why we've gone along with it this long, I don't know. This will cause a reduction of from the total revenues of about $4.1 million in FY81 to a reduction of about $200,000. So we're not talking about a big percentage decrease to the total revenues here. But I think it would mean a lot to the people using aviation gasoline, which are now paying $656,000. They would have their taxes reduced by $200,000, and then we'd have everybody that's flying airplanes around paying the same rate. And there's been no argument that I've heard as to why one portion of the industry should be paying a higher rate than another portion.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I support the amendment. I think that lowering the taxes on private pilots to be compatible with that on jet fuel is fair. This would not at all affect the Aviation Safety Foundation program. It doesn't affect the surtax at all. It just says that the basic tax rate will be 2.5 cents for jet fuel and 2.5 cents for avgas.
Representative Sutcliffe.
Mr. Speaker, a question to anybody that knows the answer is that there is some revenue sharing that occurs that goes back to the communities from which the fuel is sold and the tax is collected. Does anybody know how that revenue sharing works? I seem to remember that there is such a program going on.
Representative Hofford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. According to a memo I've got of March 31st from Joe Donahue, it's only 3%.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, based on that, the total reduction of revenue sharing to municipalities caused by this amendment would be $6,000.
Representative Herbert.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to ask a question is how would this, they was trying to get a total increase into the general fund to the amount that would fund this safety program. I wonder how that would affect the thing because it goes to different funds apparently, but it's all the same government.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, this amendment would not affect revenues in the general fund as there was a dedicated airports fund prior to statehood, and as I understand it, the proceeds of these taxes go into the revolving into the airports fund. so it would not have any impact on the general fund. It would have a minor impact on the airport fund.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 6 to the Second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 19 yeas, 19 nays.
Amendment number 6 has not been adopted. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101 be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, placed in final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 101, Second Finance, entitled An Act Relating to the Motor Fuel Tax, AS 4340, and providing for an effective date.
Is there debate? Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, what I'll do, since everybody is fairly clear on the ab fuel portion of this bill, there are other sections of the bill that might need or warrant some clarification. Section 1 deals with the method by which motor fuel tax is collected in the delivery of diesel fuel and delivery of diesel and other fuels by jobbers and truckers and fuel dealers and so on. The law is rather unclear as to how that's to be done, and as a result of the unclarity of the law, the department has redefined the way that it has been applying the law and decided to begin applying it differently. And this has resulted in some controversy. So what this section does is it clarifies the method by which the department shall collect the tax from here on out. Section 2 deals with removing the tax that is now applied to stationary power plants, generators, generating facilities. If you have a generating facility generating power for a small community or an individual home, it removes the, I believe it's a 2-cent tax on that portion of the fuel tax. And Section 3 is further clarification defining what a user is. And then Section 4 clarifies for the Department of Revenue what they have done in their new application of the law to the fuel dealers. The fuel dealers are responsible for collecting the tax on motor fuel when it's delivered to consumers. If that fuel is being used for road uses and vehicle purposes. And the department has always applied and accepted, and they've proven so by their audits that they've conducted in the past. They've approved the methods, and it's very clear that they've approved these methods of collecting taxes. If the dealer puts it in a tank on delivery, he is not putting it, he has no reason to know that what its end result will be, nor does he have any reason to know that it's going, may or may not be used in a motor vehicle. And if it's not used in a motor vehicle, there is no tax. Therefore, if he's putting it in a tax or putting it in a motor or in a fuel tank, the accepted just in the past has not been to collect a tax at that time. Well, the department has taken a new view of this and decided that unless they can clearly demonstrate that they have not sold fuel that ultimately resulted in the burning of that fuel in a motor vehicle, that many of these dealers should be charged a tax on that, and they're doing it retroactively. It's a retroactive change in the method that the department applies the law. So what this does is it tells the department they cannot retroactively collect taxes from those dealers unless they can clearly demonstrate or that there was fuel sold and that it was sold to someone who was, in fact, using it in a motor vehicle and it was not taxed. So the Section 4 is in there to clarify that and to give the department some direction there.
Is there further debate? Representative Moss? The House, please stand at ease. We're under debate on the second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101. Third reading, Representative Hofford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill now presents me with an interesting quandary. The first sections of the bill, I believe, are very necessary and worthwhile, and they correct what I consider to be an abuse of the Department of Revenue. And the next section is a tax repealer on stationary engines, which I would support. And the third section increases taxes on aviation fuel and more on the small portion of that market, which is the gasoline versus jet fuel. Mr. Speaker, I guess I can't support the bill at this point.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I believe I have a question on this, too. I've studied this bill first in the State Affairs Committee and then on the Finance Subcommittee, so I have I've been sort of following as it goes along. The Department of Revenue characterized their support of at least the first three sections of the bill as, I think they used the word mild or some similar term. What they were really saying, I think, was they didn't have any objection to it and they would sort of go along, which I suppose probably characterizes my opinion on the bill as well. However, we did hear testimony from the Department of Law on what is now Section 4 that they thought that was unconstitutional, the reason being this, that a number of people have paid these taxes. A number of the dealers were collecting these taxes. They're not in any argument with the state at the present time. And they're, they've done their thing, and they did it right, and they did it according to the book, and they're not being contested. On the other hand, there are a whole number of other dealers who the state contends did not properly collect the taxes. They are in it's not litigation because it hasn't gotten that far yet, but they're in a discussion with the state in which the state is saying that they owe these monies. And so what we would be doing here in Section 4 is saying that the people who paid the taxes all along, well, that's sort of too bad. But you people that didn't collect the taxes, you're going to have to pay, you're going to be have those taxes forgiven, which the Department of Law felt was represented a real flaw. I would be curious to know if in the subsequent hearings, I notice this has been bouncing like a yo-yo from one committee to another and back and forth. I'd be curious if in subsequent hearings the Department of Law had decided that they did not think that rose to a substantial level of flaw, and whether they are maintaining their objection, because they were very the attorney that spoke to us the last time we heard this at under the Finance Subcommittee jurisdiction was very adamant that this section would not pass muster, and I at least got the impression that with this section in there the governor that the recommendation would be that the governor veto the bill. So I'd just kind of be curious what their subsequent discussion is.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The previous speaker is only partly right. First of all, there are only a couple of dealers in the state who are not affected by the Department of Revenue's new move. And if you look at Section 4, it says that because of a reasonable doubt, the dealer thought that the fuel would not be used in motor engines. What we've got, Mr. Speaker, is a situation where the Department of Revenue is telling dealers that deliver fuel that they're responsible for policing the use of that fuel after they've delivered it. A purchaser orders 500 gallons of furnace oil, signs a ticket saying that that's furnace oil, and then uses some of it, subsequently uses some of it in his truck or his tractor. He is in violation of state law if he does that, if he's bought his furnace oil. But what the Department of Revenue is saying is that the dealer that delivered that fuel is responsible for not having collected that tax. And they're going back and auditing records, and they're looking and they're making judgment calls on invoices to determine whether they think that somebody that bought furnace oil used it for some other purpose. And on the basis of that judgment, they are assessing the dealers the tax, and it's not right. And what this simply does is state that if the dealer delivered that fuel and the reasonable doubt was that it wouldn't be used in motor engine, and I should certainly hope, Mr. Speaker, that reasonable doubt would more than exist if a purchaser signed a ticket calling it stove oil or furnace oil. And probably the two people or the three dealers in the state who are not affected probably happen to have only homes and businesses to deliver to where no one abused it by using it in engines. So I think that Section 4 is a very important part of the Act. I support the whole bill. And, you know, I think that it's a good piece of legislation. I hope that there aren't enough people here on the floor who are opposed to the aviation tax section that would kill what is a very important issue to people in this state. One dealer that I'm aware of has a $500,000 bill against him. They've assessed him clear back to 1973. What they've done is they've audited his records for 1980 and said, here's the, their judgment is that he was only 80% correct or 50% correct in the sales he had made. In other words, a certain percentage of the people had used that fuel for something other than furnace oil or stove oil. They're taking that percentage factor, using it to apply to all the time from 73 forward and assessing him a tax on that basis. And I think, Mr. Speaker, that it's wrong.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very much in favor of doing something about airplane safety in this state, having been the subject of one crash in my life, if that's enough. and certainly these other sections of the bill sound like good things, but what I've learned today about our taxing policy here on the aviation industry doesn't make any sense to me. It appears that not only do our statutes provide that the small aircraft operators pay 4 cents a gallon under existing law and the jets only pay 2.5 cents, but now we're going to make that problem even worse. We're going to raise the rate on the small aircraft from 4 to 4.5, raise it 0.5 cent, while on jet, which is already lower by far than the small aircraft are paying, we're going to raise that only 0.25 cent to 2.75. So the net result is that not only do we have an inequity in the tax rates of our existing air carriers, but we're going to exacerbate that by increasing it more on the private operators and the small businessmen. And that just doesn't make any sense to me. Why we want to increase the tax more when it's already too high on the small businessmen and the small operators doesn't make any sense to me. And since learning that, I can no longer support this bill unless this bill can somehow be amended so that we have some equity in our taxing policy. I would like to vote for it because I'm in support of the safety program idea and the fact that the state should come up with some money for that. I do think that will be a benefit, but not at the cost of perpetuating and increasing an existing inequity in our tax policies.
Representative Bettesworth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to support the comments of the representative from the Matanuska Valley there on the fuel dealer situation. One of the things that he didn't mention is that a lot of these so-called or these previous customers of the fuel distributors are now no longer around or no longer in the state, and revenue is saying to that fuel distributor that just because that guy disappeared, that's too bad. He's got to go back and try to make up that. This is a terrible inequity, and this is a serious situation and does involve hundreds of thousands of dollars of fuel dealers in the state that it is not their responsibility. What revenue is really asking these people to do is to look at his customer and make a determination as to whether that man is perjuring himself or not. Now, that's not anything that anybody should ask one person to do to his customer.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had a question that comes from the comments or questions that were raised by Representative Miller on Section 4 of the bill. And the question is this, that under Section 4 of the bill, it says the department doesn't collect the tax from the dealer if it's an exempt sale or in effect they had the certificate. But what, and apparently there are amounts of tax in dispute right now between people that sell fuel and the Department of Revenue. What happens to those people who have decided, well, I'm not going to take on the Department of Revenue, I'm going to cough up the money and pay it, and they did that. And then Section 4 comes along, and the people that didn't pay the tax are home free. But the ones that did, seems to me that they're getting the short end of a pretty dirty stick. And their legislation doesn't seem to address that at all. It doesn't provide for any sort of refunds to those people that perhaps shouldn't have paid the tax in the first place because they didn't collect it. And it seems to me that it does. If there are people who have paid the tax and there's no provision for any refund, that we are creating a very inequitable situation, at least, and maybe it does rise to the level of a constitutional question. I remember last year there was an analogous situation that occurred with regards to the collection of raw fish tax in certain cases, and for whatever reason, it didn't seem to turn into a major issue of the legislature, although we did take some steps to resolve it. One of the things we did not do was to allow people to claim exemptions for many years back. We set a cutoff date in it. But I do have a question on Section 4. Are there people who paid taxes in that they didn't collect, and how are they going to be treated if this bill is adopted?
Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, in response to the question, there is no one who has paid this tax, so to speak. And what has occurred here is there's not an outstanding tax that's reimbursable or would become reimbursable under this. What has occurred is the dealers adopted a mechanism of determining whether or not a particular fuel sale should have taxes collected at that sale. And they adopted that mechanism of determining that and put it into practice and have been using it for 40 years. And over that 40 years, or in the past few years, came out in testimony that the department had been approached by some of the dealers asking them if their method was satisfactory. The department didn't have an answer. They did not have guidelines. So they continued to do it on the basis that they had been for many years. Now, with respect to the comment of the constitutionality made by the representative from Juneau, the department had someone at hearings that commented that they felt it may be unconstitutional, and our department says it's, or our own legal staff says that it's defensible. But, Mr. Speaker, you're not talking about a windfall resulting for somebody who did not pay taxes. You're talking about people who sell fuel on a margin of profit that varies from 4 to 7, 8 cents margin per gallon, depending on how far you have to deliver it. And if it is sold as fuel tax, you add 8 cents on top of whatever that price is, and that 8 cents goes to the state. So nobody's keeping money in their pocket that they wouldn't otherwise have gotten. What you're looking at is people having sold fuel with a 4, 5, 6% profit in it, of which after delivery maybe 4 cents of that is actual profit per gallon. And then you're looking at the department coming back and saying, well, after the fact, even though that we by our own audits and approval of your methods in the past, by virtue of our approval of our audits that reflected the mechanism you were collecting the taxes, in spite of that, we're going to change the way that we interpret the law. And on that fuel that you sold, that you received 4 cents profit on, we now want 8 cents, which means they're taking out their whole profit plus quite a bit of their actual cost. So, and they're going back several years doing this on a very large amount of fuel. And what they're basically looking at doing is going back and collecting taxes on that fuel that those dealers cannot prove was not burnt in a motor vehicle. So it turns out to be a multi-million dollar proposition for the department, and it also turns out to be something that would bankrupt a very large number of fuel dealers. There's 52 fuel dealers in the whole state. And of those 52 fuel dealers, the department was setting out to audit every one of them. None of them have paid the taxes at this point in time, and none of them have bent to the department's demands. They united together and approached the legislature for some help. And that's what this bill addresses.
Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a little further clarification, and that is that these dealers that are being affected by this new approach by the Department of Revenue did collect tax on the fuel that the end user specified he was going to use in motor vehicles. So they were collecting the tax And the only reason some of them have a different level of so-called violation at this time is that they were happen to be dealing with more people who used or allegedly used the fuel that they bought for furnace oil in vehicles. And that's the only difference in the level of problem with the Department of Revenue. So I don't think anyone will be disenfranchised. I don't think anyone will be unfair against in this situation.
Before we vote, and I recognize the next member, I'd like to advise the body that I am a stockholder in a company that sells fuel, and I ask that I be allowed to abstain from voting.
Object.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the information that the representative from Wasilla pointed out, which I had not heard in the two hearings that I attended on the on this subject, relative to the number of people who, or the volume of people, of firms who are involved who are or are not affected by this business. And that's good information. Unfortunately, it still doesn't answer, nobody's yet answered the question I raised, and that is, does the Attorney General's office continue their opposition to this section? Because it was not a wishy-washy, we may be opposed thing. The testimony from the Attorney General's office was that this particular section would not pass muster. And my question is whether they have modified their position on that.
Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, the Attorney General's office has made no official statement that this is unconstitutional.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Brown.
I beg to differ with the member. I was at the same State Affairs Committee meeting that he was chairing that the member from Juneau referred to, and they said quite the reverse of what he said they said.
Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, there was someone from the Attorney General's office who had questioned with it. They questioned its constitutionality. The Attorney General's office has issued no formal opinion on the subject.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Has any member failed to vote? Representative Chuckwack. Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 29 yeas, 9 nays.
The second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101 has passed the House. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move. I take a bath. Mr. Speaker, I move to ask unanimous consent that the second Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 101, the roll call and final passage, be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This time I'd like to ask the Majority Leader for a motion to adjourn until 7 o'clock. Excuse me, to recess.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess until 7 o'clock.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House stands in recess until 7 o'clock. The House, please come back to order. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to serve notice for reconsideration on HB 586, please.
Representative Phillips has served notice of reconsideration for his vote on House Bill 586. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, are we on the calendar?
Yes, we're down to consideration of the daily calendar.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that consideration of House Bill 866 be held over for tomorrow's calendar.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Carney.
Mr. Speaker, on House Bill 101, there was a letter of intent that the Finance Committee moved that would have stipulated that the certificate mentioned in the legislation could be complied with by a certain phrase on the bill that is given to the consumer when they buy the fuel. I don't know. I think Representative Halford could move that or I could.
Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Finance Committee letter of intent for House Bill 101.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 649 by the Transportation Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Regions and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, prescribing the duties of regional transportation and public facilities directors, and providing for an effective date. Transportation Committee had House Bill 649 under consideration. The committee recommended replace with committee substitute for House Bill 649 with the same title, and the majority recommended it do pass. The do pass is signed by Representative Cato, Chairman, concurred in by Abood, Metcalf, and Moss. Sutcliffe signed, no recommendation. Duncan, no recommendation. Zharoff, no recommendation. Finance Committee had House Bill 649 under consideration, and the committee recommended it be replaced with the Transportation Committee substitute for House Bill 649, and had individual recommendations. Adams, Chairman, Bettysworth, and Fuller signed do pass. Haugen, Hurlburt, Carney, Cuddy, Chuckwuck, Cotton, Meekins, and Montgomery had no recommendation.
Before I ask the Majority Leader for a motion to accept the committee substitute, I'd like to get a quorum call so I can establish the fact we can move bills. Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Will the clerk please take the roll?
The roll shows 25 members present.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Transportation Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the Transportation Committee substitute is adopted in lieu of the original bill. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I call the House.
House has been called on the Transportation Committee substitute for House Bill 649. The Sergeant of Arms advised the pages to locate the missing members. Are there amendments to the Transportation Committee substitute for House Bill 649?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Will the clerk please read the First Amendment?
Amendment number 1 by Representative Anderson, page 3, line 20. After plans, delete the word program and insert agency.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the amendment be adopted.
Before the amendment can be adopted unanimously, the call will have to be satisfied. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I lift the call of the House.
Call has been lifted. Would you restate the motion, Representative Anderson?
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the amendment be adopted.
Is there objection? Hearing none, amendment number 1 is adopted. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I call the House.
Call has been replaced. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Will the House please stand at ease while we're waiting for the call to be satisfied? Order. Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'll lift the call of the House, assuming that there are 30 members present.
Have you counted? There are 30 here?
I'm not sure. I think we need
a quorum.
Why don't
we take another quorum call just to be sure that we need 30? We need 30 votes to advance from second to third. Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Will the clerk please take the roll?
The roll shows 32 members present.
Call has been lifted. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the Transportation Committee substitute for House Bill 649 amended be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 649, Transportation amended, entitled An Act Relating to Regions in the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, prescribing the duties of regional transportation and public facilities directors, and providing for an effective date.
Is there debate? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, would somebody describe the cost to the state of this bill, the fiscal notifications?
Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker,
The fiscal note that accompanied this was done by the Department of Transportation. The fiscal note arrived at $9 million. I personally feel that this is an inflated fiscal note. When the Department of Transportation went from 5 regions to 3 regions, they stated that they did not save any $9 million or retain $9 million. Inasmuch as it's difficult without a management information system to arrive at our own fiscal note, then this is the one we submitted to the Finance Committee.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, could we have a... I'm sorry, perhaps Mr. Cotton wasn't here.
Representative Cotton.
Is that the fiscal note that that they expect the Finance Committee to approve, or the Free Conference Committee on the Budget to approve then, $9 million?
Representative Cato.
Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. This is the only fiscal note we had any availability to.
Is there further debate? Representative Miller?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to have an explanation of the bill. Are we setting up a series of little DOTs across the state? Is that the reason? That's the idea?
Representative Cato?
It might be interpreted as that. We already have 3 regions. I placed upon your desk information from the Transportation Committee noting the present structure of DOT. If you'll take the first one, which is this one, and look at it, you'll notice that the situation is... you'll notice that the structure is now that there is no... I always get horizontal and vertical mixed up. Horizontal communication between the departments, between the agencies. The second chart that I placed on your desk would show that those functions would be in a horizontal situation, that the regional authority would and budgeting would be in the separate regions themselves. One of the very definite advantages to this is the fact that there would be local input, that all decisions wouldn't have to be made by the commissioner, that we wouldn't have to call Juneau constantly to try to find an answer because the regions do not have answer. This was the original structure prior to 6 months ago, except the fact they did not have regional authority. This bill will give them regional authority. I think it's of great interest to all of us in as much as the capital improvement projects we put in for our areas need local input. They need the local people there working on them, the planners, the other people. And I feel a very definite indication from all over the state and the work that we did that this is the type of structure that they desire.
Representative Brown.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I really don't know very much at all about this bill. With this kind of a system, well, tell me about this, if somebody could, about this regional director. Is this a person who is exempt or partially exempt or something? Let me explain why I'm asking the question. Maybe this will elicit a broader response, which I guess is what I'm looking for. Our experience was, and this goes back to long before the period I was in the legislature and the first period I was in the legislature, our experience was that very often the regional, I don't know what the title then was, but what was basically the regional head for DOT, before that Department of Highways, and going all the way back to the old Alaska Road Commission, the territorial years, was practically ended up being kind of a king unto himself. And problems that we had in the 60s and early 70s were basically, I think, as a result that the person in that position thought he was more important with regard to establishment of public policy than mere commissioners, mere legislators, and mere governors, because he'd seen them come and go and all of that sort of thing. I guess what I'm leading up to is what we really need, however the department is organized, whether we do it or the governor does it by executive order, is we need to have accountability at the level where most of the decisions are made. If most of the decisions are going to be made by the regional director, will this then be a guy who is the keeper of the jello that we have seen so long in the Department of Transportation, that, you know, bathtub full of jello, you slap it, it just wiggles and goes back looking like it did before, which is what all those guys always did? Or is he going to be responsive because he's partially exempt, and therefore he or she has a reason out of self-preservation to pay attention to the commissioner, the governor, and the legislature?
Representative Cato? Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, I'll attempt to answer that. The regional director, who has previously been called regional engineer, would be an engineer he would be in charge of his region. The one thing that this bill does is give accountability. He would have to give accountability. Those plans would have to be submitted to the commissioner and taken from there. What it actually does, and I'm sorry, I can't say whether or not the position is partially exempt or not. I don't believe that a little kingdom would be established. I think the real advantage of this is that the people in the legislature and the people in the region would have an opportunity to give their input into it, that they would be able to help him determine the priorities of that district and the things that need to be done. At the present time, we can appropriate for capital improvement projects. However, the Department of Transportation has the right of prioritization, and that means from the commissioner on down. And because of that, that our appropriations that we put in that we think might happen this year or maybe next year can be the result of a six-year plan, which is constantly changed. You may have a situation where, let me take the Richardson Highway, for instance, is supposed to, on one six-year plan, was supposed to come into work on in 82. It's now been placed down on 86. The commissioner's office has the right of prioritization. This would slow that process down, change it so that the regions would be able to submit their priorities. Did I answer your question, I hope?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, could we have a brief at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. The House, please stand at ease. Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think the explanation of the intentions behind the bill just before the at ease were partly helpful. I can see how it's supposed to work. My only concern is that we really have to address real human behavior. And problem is, I think one of the, during the at ease, someone pointed out that one of the, I think then called regional engineers that I was describing may or may not have been guilty of the kind of kingdom building I was suggesting, but also was a very, very competent, excellent, well-respected person. That's the problem, Mr. Speaker. When you get someone who is very, very good and very capable, you get all of the benefits of what they're doing, but they also have just a natural human tendency to run the whole show, even though the Constitution and the way our government's set up is that the accountability for decisions, right or wrong, at least on the larger scale, is supposed to be in the governor, his cabinet officers, and the legislature. And I think that's accomplished by putting these regional directors in the partially exempt service, so they have to pay attention to the people they work for. And that's not in the bill, and my understanding is there has to be a special amendment to a certain provision of Title 44 in order to accomplish that. I'm still not sure I'm going to vote for the bill as it is or with an amendment because I'm still want to listen to some more of the debate. I could go either way on it. But since we're already in third reading anyway, what I suggest I'll do is that the bill will be reconsidered, and then tomorrow, if I still have that same view, I'll offer an amendment to go back to second reading so I don't have to waste the body's time with the drafting of the amendment at this time.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, just for informational purposes, I've been looking through the journals in regards to the Finance Committee action on this bill and the fiscal note that was referred to earlier in a question, and the Finance Chairman is not here at this moment, so subject to subsequent correction by him if he shows up with different information. My memory is that the journal, I think, shows what the Finance Committee actually did, which was to adopt this fiscal note and send it on, but I believe what our intent was in terms of remembering the discussion was that we did agree that the fiscal note was flawed and probably much too high. And the thinking there is, of course, is what they did is they took one of these regions that they have now. I think they have three regions now, and they would have five. They took the cost of one of those regions and assumed that if you added two regions, they would cost the same amount, and so multiply by two and added that in. But you're still going to be doing the same amount of work, whether you do it in three regions or five regions. Certainly there'll be some duplication in administrative type personnel, so there might be a small cost, you know, of a couple hundred thousand or something like that. But I think clearly $9.7 million is a little bit hard to believe, according to what I understand. So in any case, that was the discussion and the feeling, I think, or at least a sense of some of the members of the committee. But That's not what evidently happened, is that according to the records, we have passed this fiscal note on, so I just wanted to make that clear.
Representative Cotton.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, on that same topic, one of the reasons you pass a fiscal note is so that when the free conference committee on the budget finally gets to that situation, they can fund whatever is needed to implement what the bill does. Well, if we don't know what the fiscal note is, maybe we're not that serious about this legislation. I'm not aware of how serious we really are. But if we are, we should know exactly how to budget for it. And so far, the operating expenses that are going to be increased for state government include $8.2 million plus another $1.5 million indirect costs. I'm not sure what that is. I don't think that it isn't clear to me how this is going to be funded. And if you really intend to get it going this July, it's going to be an expensive thing because there's going to be some reorganization needed. I notice on this chart that on the planning staff, we have planning staff and paper shufflers. And on this staff, on this chart right here, the paper shufflers don't show up. Now, maybe that's a good deal. Maybe they just got lost in the shuffle. But it's hard for me to really decide that it's a good idea to reorganize the whole Department of Transportation based on a, you know, these are very handy charts, I understand, but I'm not quite sure how we're going to budget for it. I don't think that anybody else is very sure of that either.
Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, can we return briefly back up the calendar to introduction of guests?
Without objection, we'll return to introduction of guests. Representative Metcalf.
Mr. Speaker, we have a couple of guests in the audience, constituents of yourself and Mr. Montgomery. We have Bob and Sharon Kubik.
Are there other guests for introduction? Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, more to the regionalization of how this would work. Sometimes I think simplistically, and that probably isn't something to brag about, but I noticed when we created DOTPF, and maybe we made a mistake doing this, it took an awful lot of pages. Actually, we did it with the governor. The governor did it, and we put our stamp of approval on it, but he did it using a document that the previous legislature had actually developed. And it was 30, 40, 50 pages long. And so I guess my first question is, are we completely reorganizing DOTPF in this very short bill? I question how that can happen. That's just sort of a mechanical problem, but it worries me because we didn't have all those other dozens and dozens and dozens of pages just because we thought it was neat to mess around with a lot of paper. But more important to that, Mr. Speaker, I'm kind of curious, in each regional office, will we have, for instance, a bridge design in each regional office? Right now, at least as I understand it, you've got one bridge design office in the commissioners, in the one administrative setup. And I would, just offhand, I would think that would make a lot of sense. I mean, the geographical data, the soil data, all that sort can be reduced to a piece of paper that's sent down to one agency, one staff, and a fairly relatively small group of skillful engineers, and I think that describes the people in bridge design, incidentally, can do all the design work necessary. If we're going to have five different bridge design offices spread around the state, I suspect we're beginning to really lose any efficiency at all. I suspect that, number one, it might be hard to find that many good people. And I think it's going to take a lot more people to staff five offices than it is one. It may not take five times as many, but I suspect it'll take more than, I don't think we can just take the present bridge design group, for instance, and divide by five and send one-fifth to each region. And I'm selecting bridge design just because that happens to be the first thing that comes to my mind. There are other similar functions in the office over there, and I wonder. I'd just like an explanation of how that sort of thing is going to work.
Representative Cato.
Mr. Speaker, to answer the question of the senior representative from Juneau, there has in this bill it does not plan at all to touch the bridge design situation. I recognize very thoroughly, and I think everyone that worked on this bill recognized very thoroughly, that is one of the areas that should be concentrated in a specific spot. This deals with bridge design, of course, deals with federal funds, the present bridge design situation is extremely competent, and I agree that to scatter it would decrease the efficiency.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the bill itself, you know, I recognize that the committee staff and the chairperson of the Transportation Committee have put a lot of work in on this during the interim and also during this session. I do have some concerns, however. You know, as we look back at what's happened on DOT and the problems we've had over the past six, 7 years with that department, there has been some very valid concerns generated and expressed, and some real attempts on the part of the legislature and to correct those problems and correct those concerns. DOT was created by executive order, and I voted against it at that time because I didn't think proper planning had been done, and I wasn't really convinced it was going to work. And I think we found that there have been some serious deficiencies in the department. Over the past 4 or 5 years, I and others have worked to try to correct some of those deficiencies, and we worked with the administration to try to do that. We haven't been very successful. I think the reason why we haven't been successful is because the administration hasn't been convinced that what they did was wrong. The administration hasn't been convinced that they should make a change in the Department of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, the only way we're going to straighten out that department, which is a massive part of our bureaucracy, is to have cooperation between this branch and the executive branch. Mr. Speaker, I don't think it's very wise for this legislature to pass at this time this bill. And the reason why is because it does do a reorganizing and a restructuring of the Department of Transportation. And even if we do it by this legislation, that doesn't mean it's going to work. That doesn't mean it's going to solve the problems. You can only solve the problems if the guy on the third floor agrees that he wants to solve those problems. What I think we should be doing, and there's been some good work done on this, and that work can carry forward, as we know, come November and come January, there's going to be a different person on the third floor. And I think the legislature at this point should sit back, evaluate what's been done over the past few years in DOT, the information that we've gathered, the problems that we've found out, and wait and then work with the new executive, with the new governor, in reorganizing and restructuring and getting DOT so it can work and so the projects can get out on the road. We can pass this legislation and think we're going to solve the problem, and the new governor might say, baloney. He doesn't like what we've structured here. And he's not going to go along with it, and it's not going to be successful. I think it'd be a mistake, then, for us to do that at this time. I think we should put together our information. It's been done very well by the Transportation Committee. They can continue doing that during the interim. We can come back next session with a governor who's going to be there for 4 years or perhaps 8 years, work with him, and that's been part of our problem. We haven't been able to work with the administration on resolving these problems. I've been in the governor's office, and I know the chairman of the Transportation Committee and others have been, and you don't get that good a response because they're not interested in seeing